So I, last night at 9:30, I got a telephone call from Elihu Abrams that he just missed his connection to Santa Barbara. So he asked me to give this talk. I'm not sure it's going to be exactly the same talk, but I think it would be similar, would have been similar. And sometime later, I'll give you a talk about United Airlines if you want me to. Okay. So here are my collaborators, Steve Gibbelson, Chetan Nayak, Klaus Volker, Elihu, and my student Lanin. When I first started to work on this problem, what really struck me, if you allow me to say, is that there are many calculations, many predictions, but very few pictures. So what I'm going to do here is to tell you about a picture, and there would be one place in the talk there would be some hard calculation, but you will have to ask me about the details later on. I won't be able to tell you the details in this 20 minutes that I have. So basically this talk is about a speculative phase diagram and a picture, not detailed calculations. So about a year and a half ago when we learned about this, or at least I learned about this experiment, what became clear that some of this data can be explained if you make a simple assumption of a quantum critical point. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about why there is a quantum critical point, or how could there be a quantum critical point in this problem. And then I'm going to tell you a little bit about the nature of the insulating and the conducting phases. So let me briefly, since Sergei has shown a lot of data, tell you what the experimental picture in 2D metal insulator transition looks like. Here's resistivity against temperature, and you change the carrier concentration, and you get a set of curves which go up. That means as temperature goes to zero, resistivity seems to go to infinity. And set of curves for which, if as temperature goes to zero, resistivity either keeps on decreasing or saturates to some finite value. A natural assumption is that there is a quantum critical point at zero temperature which separates the conducting states from an insulating state. And metal insulator transition is always a quantum phase transition and not a crossover. At finite temperature, everything conducts a little bit, so it's always a zero temperature phase transition. And you can define this very precisely in terms of what Walter Kohn discussed many years ago in terms of localization of many body wave function. So there is a precise question at zero temperature which separates conducting states from insulating states. But you don't do experiments at zero temperature, you do experiments at finite temperature, and you have to ask, how do I know the zero temperature quantum critical point by measurements at finite temperature? It's interesting that you can do this, and Sergei has shown how to do this in terms of what theoreticians would call finite size scaling. So a quantum system has an extra dimension, which is the temperature. As temperature goes to zero, this dimension goes to infinity, so you're tracking down the behavior of an infinite system from a finite system. And there's a well-known procedure, which is called finite size scaling, which is, of course, what they've used in determining this quantum critical point by looking at the crossing points that he showed. So let me say a few more words about the scaling theory. So if I make an assumption of a quantum critical point at zero temperature, and imagine that we have two parameters in the problem, R is the resistance and lambda is some measure of the electron-electron interaction, then there will be a fixed point, and since it's a critical point, it will have one relevant direction in the problem. So effectively, you can always map this problem into a one-parameter scaling theory, regardless of how many different directions you have, because by definition, critical point, you have one relevant parameter as opposed to a multi-critical point. So if you make the simplifying assumptions, which Elihu Abrahams and us together did at the quantum critical point, then you can go a little bit further and show that the conductance behaves in an exponential manner as a function of temperature T with an exponent, combination of exponents called nu z, where nu is the correlation length exponent and z is the dynamic scaling exponent. You can go a little bit further and you find that simple assumption of scaling leads to a very simple result, which is that if you normalize conductance with respect to GC, then the conductance on the metallic side is 1 over that on the insulating side, which they have called the reflection symmetry. I want to emphasize this point because this is a really very important piece of evidence here, because generally you do not expect any symmetry, particular symmetry, between the metallic state and the insulating state. They're so different that you don't expect any particular symmetry. But the fact that there is a reflection symmetry around the critical point is telling you something. And as you well know, one of the sufficient assumptions you can make is that of a critical point and a correlation length going to infinity, which gives rise to such symmetries in the problem. So I take this experimental point that there is a reflection symmetry around the critical point or a phase transition point at zero temperature to be very important, because it's telling you that there may be other ways of getting this reflection symmetry, but one way to get this reflection symmetry is to have a critical point where the correlation length goes to infinity. Similar results for electric field scaling has been obtained by many experimentalists and Kravchenko and his collaborators. And another thing that you learn from quantum critical region point idea is that the region of the quantum critical point shrinks as you go to lower and lower temperatures. So in this plot, I have resistivity coefficient or derivative of the resistivity on this side to be positive, this side to be negative. So this is insulating regime, metallic regime at zero temperature with a quantum critical point. And here's the region of quantum critical scaling, which keeps on shrinking as you go to lower and lower temperature. And that seems to be what you see in experiment, at least in some experiments. Now, so what are the questions here? This is how, from my perspective, this is how what we learned from this paper that Elihu and I and others wrote, is that if you make a simple assumption of a critical point, you are able to systematize a whole lot of data. So the question, to me at least, was what is the origin of the quantum critical point and what is the nature of the insulating and the metallic phases? Now, conventional perturbative approach that we have seen since the paper by the Gang of Four seems to fail quite badly. It gives you no indication of a quantum critical point anywhere. Moreover, these scaling equations that were written down by Finkelstein don't even give a description of the insulating state, because it doesn't even have an attractive insulating fixed point, even in three dimensions. So to us, that seems like that there's something wrong with this one-loop perturbative renormalization group calculations. And not only that, in the metallic states, the renormalization group flows are uncontrolled, hence they do not even give you a description of the metallic phase. I want to switch gears, and I want to convince you the problem does not look as mysterious as it seems when you look at the problem perturbatively. If you think about the phases, or what are the possible phases you can have in the strong coupling problem, then it doesn't look so mysterious. And that's what I want to turn to. So we're going to, I'm going to draw a speculative phase diagram, and then I'm going to fill in various portions of it and tell you a little bit about them individually. So on this axis of the phase diagram, I have some measure of disorder. On this axis of the phase diagram, I have a measure of the electron-electron interaction, which is called RS, which is average separation over the effective Bohr radius. Now, if I look at the system at zero disorder and go along the electron-electron interaction line and look at very strong coupling, then there's little doubt the system is going to become a Wigner crystal. In fact, there are good numerical calculations which tell you this RS critical is 37, and beyond that, we have a Wigner crystal. There's a simple little calculation you can do to show that at zero temperature, that transition is actually a first-order melting transition in two dimensions. So there's a first-order melting as into electron plasma as we go, as we decrease the interaction through RSC. What do you expect to happen? Well, if I turn on disorder, then there's an argument due to Larkin and Ovchinnikov which says that the Wigner crystal is not going to be stable with respect to disorder, and the crystal is going to fall apart. Now, there is, however, that Larkin and Ovchinnikov argument is not quite sound at very long distances, and Giamatti and Ladislau have argued that such a system do not completely lose its character of crystallinity, but retains some of the crystalline correlations as expressed by the correlation function that I've written down, where U is the displacement of the electrons from their presumed lattice sites. So you have a parallel crystalline order in this regime, which I have called Wigner glass. And this regime over here, also according to their calculation, which is an approximate Gaussian variational calculation based on the work of Nazar and Parisi, has broken replica symmetry. Now, ordinary Anderson insulator doesn't have any broken replica symmetry, so you expect a phase boundary across broken replica symmetry and unbroken replica symmetry, where this correlation function is exponentially localized. So this is the phase which you call a Wigner glass phase. And another thing that happens is that we know the disorder, a crystalline state can lower its energy due to pinning, so it is understandable that this melting line moves up, moves toward smaller and smaller values of RS, because a liquid cannot take advantage of pinning, but a solid with shear can, and so it's natural that this phase boundary moves out in this direction. Another thing you know, that there is a good argument, but not completely rigorous arguments, due to many people, and going back all the way to Joe Imrie and Mike Bordes, that a first-order transition in the presence of disorder becomes a continuous transition. And this is what we believe. If you take an experimental trajectory, you are hitting a continuous transition, and therefore that is the quantum critical point that we've been looking for. So if you go along this line, so you hit this point out here, some point out here, and that point would be the quantum critical point. Now, once I've done that, then I can ask myself, what are the correlations, spin correlations, in this Wigner class? And since the Wigner glass has parallel correlations, so it all looks almost crystalline, and since exchange depends only on nearest neighbor processes or short-range processes, we can safely calculate exchange in this problem. And that phase over here that I have described, I'm going to tell you a little bit about it now, which is called the spin-liquid phase.
Does the spin-liquid share parallel correlations with the
Wigner? Yeah, I think it does. Yeah, but the spin part would be gapped. I'll just show you that in a second.
And this non-Fermi liquid phase, what about that?
I'll talk about it. Hold your horses. Okay, so let me tell you now a little bit about the exchanges and the ring exchanges. And this is the hard calculation that I was telling you about. Many years ago, Cornelius Sering suggested that these exchanges should take place in a Wigner crystal. And in the context of solid helium-3, there have been quite a few calculations, mainly by Roget, where he has tried to do these calculations, where the particles, multi-particle ring exchanges, were like this is two-particle ring exchange, three-particle ring exchange, four-particle ring exchange, can be quite significant. We have calculated these exchanges using many-dimensional WKD method, more or less along the lines that Albert Schmidt had written down. And this requires a large optimization problem, but nonetheless, they're quite not hard to calculate. And here I've plotted exchanges from 2 to 18 particle exchanges. After that, you can derive an asymptotic formula. What to us was rather surprising is that when you take these exchanges, put them back in terms of spin operators, you find the nearest neighbor exchange J, next nearest neighbor exchange, and so on. And this magnitude of these nearest neighbor exchanges and next nearest neighbor exchanges are quite significant.
Steve, what is the one aspect?
It's the exponent of the WKD. S. Is that there? R is to the 1 half, it's a dimensionless quantity. It goes in the exponential, right? So you have a magnetic Hamiltonian with all these exchange constants which are of the order of, for example, if you take R is equals 5, it's 5.2 degrees, 7 is 1.6, 10 is 0.4, 15 is 0.06, and so on. And the ratios are quite substantial, so there's a huge amount of frustration in the system. And the energy scales are roughly quite comparable to the temperatures that we're talking about. This particular exchange Hamiltonian has been studied numerically quite carefully, and it just came out in Physical Review Letters last week by the French group. And they have been pursuing this Hamiltonian for a while because there's quite a lot of evidence of solid helium-3 showing behaviors very similar to this, and I'll come back to it at the very end of my talk. In this recent paper, Claire Lullier and her collaborators argue that this spin-liquid state is indeed a gapped spin-liquid state. So you have electrons paired into singlets, just like the
calculation of the crystalline state.
Yes, correct. But since the short range, sure. What do you want?
What do you mean by spin liquid crystalline state?
Right. So in fact, it makes it even better because since there are no spin piles, since there's no translational symmetry, the competing states would have been spin pile states, and they're not distinct states of matter, so all I need is a quantum disordered state, and that's a spin liquid by this definition. So let's go back and look at the spin liquid state out here. So we are indeed actually predicting a new phase out here, which is the spin-liquid phase. Now, experiments, susceptibility experiments, which would be important in seeing whether such a state exists or not, are very hard to do in two-dimensional electron systems, I'm told. Similarly, specific heat experiments, which could see two-dimensional specific heat experiments, which could see a gap in the specific heat or the temperature specific heat falling exponentially, that's also hard to do, I'm told, but presumably it will get done. They will get done sometime. But in solid helium-3, I'll come back to it, you do see some of this effect that I'm talking about first.
Why would it heat fall exponentially?
Because the gap's in liquid.
No, but you say it still has some kind of
It could have a parallel. No, phonons at this low temperatures, I think, would be very.
No, you're
subtracting them.
Electrons,
right. So there could be some parallel there. Yeah. If you just take the spin part, if you take the pure spin specific heat, it will fall exponentially. Spin part of the specific heat. Yeah. How much time do I have? By the way, I know nothing
left.
About it. Huh?
You have 1 minute left.
I have 1 minute left. Can you sort of come to the question
okay,
after one?
Hold the question, please. And you'll
yeah. Okay. So let me quickly then, in 1 minute, tell you about the remaining phase over here, and then you can ask me questions about this. So. There's an argument that Elihu and others and I gave, which I find quite convincing, but others don't, but I'll give it to you anyway, which is that if you have a system which you know for sure in two dimensions, if you turn off the interaction, the system will localize. That much we know from Anderson and collaborators. So you have a system, as you turn the interactions off, the system localizes. So therefore, this conducting state in the presence of interaction is not adiabatically continuous to a free Fermi gas or something like a Fermi liquid. And therefore, if you find a metallic state, it has to be a non-Fermi liquid. Now, what do you know about non-Fermi liquids? Well, on the melted side, since the correlations are rather big, it's a second order transition, within that range of correlation length, we still have these exchanges that we were talking about. So we have something like a spin pseudo gap state, if you like. The electrons, you have pairs which are put together, up and down spins put together into singlets. So you have this correlation, spin correlations, which their magnitudes are comparable to temperature, and therefore the system would be highly sensitive to magnetic field at the scale of 1 Tesla, which corresponds to temperature about 1.5 degrees. So this could explain the sensitivity to the system from this perspective with respect to parallel magnetic field. In a very simple model of of electron-electron interactions and disorder that Elihu Abrams, my student, and I looked at, you could indeed have a situation where the disorder is irrelevant if the system is a non-Fermi liquid. In other words, if you make a simple assumption of a non-Fermi liquid spectral function, turn on impurities, and ask if the interaction is strong enough, can the system be can the impurities be relevant for that system? The answer is yes, indeed it can be for in a simple model. So there's at least a proof in principle, approximate though, that the non-Fermi liquid state, if you can have strong enough interaction, then the disorder may be irrelevant and you can get a metallic state. Our current thinking on this problem is that this metallic state is likely to be a spin pseudogap state. So you have electrons paired up, and should I stop?
Yes.
I will stop. Okay, thanks.
Since I am the chairman, and I asked a question earlier, and I don't think it was answered, this non-thermal liquid state.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about the state might have at zero temperature?
Yeah, I mean, this is a hard problem, right? So what we have been looking at if you have a spin gap state, so let's say at finite temperature, you have electrons which are paired up in the singlet, and you think in terms of conductivity as any square tau over m, then the scattering rate is going to be cut off by the presence of the fact that their spins are in the singlet form. As you go to, and the singlets have broke, the singlets form more and more as you lower the temperature, so the scattering rate gets cut off, so as you go to lower and lower temperature, the conductivity increases. Now, now the system has a lot of disorder, so we don't expect completely to be a gap spin state, but the disorder will make the randomize the exchange constants in the problem, so there to be a spin pseudo gap state. Now, the fate of that particular state at low temperatures is not particularly clear to us at this point of time. However, what is clear is that we know that there is an initial drop in the initial increase in the conductivity because of this formation of the singlet. So that's as far as I can answer your question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Now, on this phase diagram, one thing that surely is a speculation at that point, R is equal to 5.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I mean, that one point I accept.
Now, thank you.
No, no, I'm not I have a point to make. Now, the same calculation of separately, Sanatana separately, actually, and improved calculations by separately later on, so that if you go along the zero disorder line, you have a ferromagnetic instability.
Correct.
Visual ferromagnetic
Correct.
Instability.
Thank you for bringing it up. Okay, let me just tell you something. Okay, go ahead. Do you want to say more?
My question, why is that showing up?
Okay, it does show up. Thanks.
Around R is equal to 30 or
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely right. The point is that in this regime, the exchange constant, nearest neighbor exchange constant, is antiferromagnetic. But when you cross this boundary, they become ferromagnetic. Okay? So that particular fit, so there's another line over here, which would, maybe some complex, since there's disorder in the system, there could be a complex spin glass type of a state, but the ferromagnetism would show up somewhere over here as it crosses this boundary out here, just at that point. And in fact, turns out from these calculations we have done, it's pretty close to that. It's about 39 or so.
Yeah, it should be very close, even in Monte
Carlo. Yeah, and that's absolutely the point. Very good point, actually. I didn't get a chance to say. Yes, Subin.
So it's about the issue of relevant or irrelevant disorientation. The spectral function of non-thermal liquid has a sharp singularity that has constant
right.
momentum. So surely a disorder does destroy momentum.
Right.
So what precisely do you mean?
Right. Right. Okay. That's
rephrase the question.
The question is that the non-thermal liquid, the system has disorder, and the non-thermal liquid descriptions that we have been talking about has the momentum conservation. How do you see that? So. I think I can tell you what exactly we did. So if you take a system with disorder and do the replica average, the system becomes completely translationally invariant. Okay? At that stage, if you make the assumption of non-Fermi liquid Green's function, you are not making blunders. You're not
as a function of momentum,
because it's all translationally invariant after you do the replica averaging. And that's the stage at which you make the assumption of a non-Fermi liquid, and then you calculate from there. And presumably the effect of disorder shows up as you take the replica limit n going to zero again. This is always true. If you take any random impurity system and replica average, it becomes translationally invariant. Everything looks like translationally invariant system, but as you take n going to zero, you must recover the effect of the disorder again.
Okay, I think we should terminate the questions at this point. We are running somewhat late, so let's thank the two speakers this morning.